Welcome and thank you for standing by. Today's conference will now begin. All lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question, you'd press star 1 and record your first and last name. If you need to withdraw your question, you would press star 2. Today's conference is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect now. I will turn the call over to Lauren Gacious. Thank you. You may begin.
Good morning, and thank you. All of you for joining us to hear NOAA's Winter Outlook for the United States. My name is Lauren Gacious from NOAA Communications. If you have any questions following the briefing today, you can reach me at my email, which is Lauren, Lauren.Gacious, which is spelled G-A-C-H-E-S at NOAA.gov, and by phone at 202-740-8314. NOAA produces seasonal temperature and precipitation outlooks and the U.S. drought outlook to help communities prepare for what is likely to come in the next few months and minimize weather impacts on lives and livelihoods. Today's discussion will begin with brief remarks, and then we'll take questions from reporters. A recording of this briefing will be made available online at NOAA.gov about an hour after our call ends today. Delivering the U.S. winter outlook is Mike Halpert, Deputy Director of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, located in College Park, Maryland. Mike is on the team that develops the seasonal forecasts and the El Nino Southern Oscillation Diagnostic Discussion. Here's Mike Halpert.
Thank you, Lauren. The National Weather Service plays a critical part in helping the nation to prepare for, respond to, and recover from extreme weather and climate events. Providing impact-based decision support services improves the public's ability to make fast, smart, and life-saving decisions, enabling us to build a more weather-ready and climate-smart nation. The Winter Outlook is produced in order to give American communities the best possible scientific prediction of how we think the winter will develop across the nation. Our team at the Climate Prediction Center issues these seasonal forecasts so users can account for risks and opportunities when making climate-sensitive decisions. This outlook supports everyone, from local and state governments that must plan for public needs this winter, to large and small businesses as they determine how the winter could impact transportation, market demand for their goods and services, and prices. The winter outlook is probabilistic in nature, meaning that the maps show those areas that are most likely to be warmer or colder than normal, or wetter or drier. However, the nature of a probabilistic forecast means that other outcomes are always possible, just less likely. In fact, for our probabilities to be reliable, the less likely outcomes will and must occur from time to time. That was certainly the case last winter, when a flip in the pattern during late January brought a very cold February to parts of the north and west, and resulted in a normal to cold winter in parts of the country where above average temperatures had been favored and observed up to that point. Looking to factors that often influence the winter, ENSO is most likely to be in its neutral state during the winter, meaning neither an El Nino or a La Nina is expected to develop. Therefore, any forcing this year from the tropics is likely to provide impacts on subseasonal timescales, potentially resulting in more variable conditions during the upcoming winter. During years when ENSO is not a factor, long-term trends end up playing a larger role in the prediction. These trends favor above-average temperatures across most of the South, along the East Coast, and in Alaska and Hawaii. Elsewhere, temperatures during the past 15 years have not been very much different than temperatures during our reference period of 1981 to 2010, a result that may be surprising to some. Precipitation trends have generally been weaker, but there has been a clear tendency for wetter than average winters across most of the northern part of the nation. Now on to the forecasts. For temperature, the greatest likelihood for warmer than normal conditions are in Alaska and Hawaii, with more modest probabilities for above average temperatures spanning large parts of the remaining lower 48 from the west across the south and up the eastern seaboard. The northern plains, upper Mississippi Valley, and the western Great Lakes have equal chances for below, near, or above average temperatures. And like last year, no part of the U.S. is favored to have below average temperatures this winter. The precipitation forecast favors wetter than average conditions in Alaska and Hawaii, along with northern portions of the Northern Plains, Upper Mississippi Valley, the Great Lakes, and parts of the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. Drier than average conditions are most likely for Louisiana, parts of Texas, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Oklahoma, as well as areas of northern and central California. The remainder of the U.S. falls into the category of equal chances for below, near, or above average precipitation. And for drought, after a very wet spring resulted in significant and widespread flooding in some areas, drought has reemerged in the southeast, southwest, and Texas, thanks to a very dry and warm late summer and early fall. Drought is expected to improve in portions of the southeast, mid-Atlantic, Alaska, and Hawaii, while persisting in central Texas and the southwest. And drought development is likely to occur in parts of central California. And with that, let me turn it back to Lauren.
Thanks, Mike. Before we move to Q&A, I want to introduce David Miskis. David leads the Climate Prediction Center's Drought Outlook team and contributes to the weekly Drought Monitor. David will take drought-related questions, while Mike Halpert will focus on questions about the seasonal temperature and precipitation outlook. Operator, if you could go ahead, we'll start the Q&A portion of today's call.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your first and last name. We'll wait for the first question.
Operator, if we have a question in the queue, let's go ahead and take the first question.
Thank you. The first question comes from Seth Bornstein. Seth, your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Mike, I have two questions, and then I'll get back in the queue. First, obviously with no ENSO forcing, you're talking about mostly long-term trends. What about other secondary forcings, you know, that might be involved, like NAO, or if you prefer AO, or other oscillations, El Nino type cousins? Are they all on the neutral? Is this, you know, I've known you've had past years where pretty much everything that you look for is in the sort of the neutral state. Is that the case here again, or are some of them pushing you toward this forecast a little, or is this purely just, you know, long term trend? And then the other question is, you know, you did make reference to last season's failure. Are there numbers on verification? What is your success rate right now for winter forecasts?
Sure. So the first part, that's probably easier to answer. You know, there's other forcing things, and you didn't mention, I thought you might, things like the Madden-Julian Oscillation. You mentioned the Arctic Oscillation. These are things that are likely to influence the winter on subseasonal timescales. So instead of, like, giving a kind of a consistent kick in one direction or the other for the entire three-month period, it's more likely to influence things on, let's say, maybe 2 to 4 week time period. So when you get that type of a winter, what we oftentimes see are pretty significant swings during the winter, and then trying to figure out or ascribe what the net outcome is, it becomes fairly tricky to do that. So there will likely be these types of factors that influence the winter, but really they're not a significant factor in issuing the forecast because we're really not sure what phase they'll be in at different times over the next 3 or 4 months. As far as verification, the long-term history of our verification that goes back to the mid-90s when we started issuing these forecasts, temperature outlooks, generally, right now we're running somewhere between 30 and 35 for what we call a Heidke skill score, which is simply the percent improvement over a no-skill or random-type forecast, so roughly maybe 30-35%. Precipitation is generally half that. So actually, the last winter, the precipitation forecasts turned out to have outscored the temperature ones.
Okay. So if I could just follow up on the first question. So does this mean when you have a neutral ENSO that you get more wild swings because there is no ENSO to swamp out the Madden Julian or the AO? And is that what we might be seeing more of this winter, bigger swings from, instead of just generally warm or generally cool and generally wet and generally dry, but swings back and forth?
Yeah, that certainly more likely this winter than, say, a winter like 2015-16 when we're largely flooded with warm air all winter. So that's kind of what we're expecting this winter.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Brian Sullivan. Brian, your line is open.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for doing this, guys. I'm curious about the conditions in California. You expect drought to kind of get going again out there. Could you talk a little bit about that and how much the warm water in the Gulf of Alaska might play a role in that?
This is Dave Miskus here. I'll talk about the drought in California. Right now, there isn't any abnormal dryness or drought really in California. They just added some in the southern Sierra Nevadas in the current drought monitor. But the monthly and the three-monthly outlooks are tending towards subnormal odds for precipitation. So we still have, though, of course, this only goes through January, end of January. You still have February and March, which can be very wet months. So, and also the reservoirs are near normal for California, so that's good news right now. We're just putting it there to, based on the models and the probability outlooks for a possible D1 maybe by the end of January. But not a big, widespread, huge drought that we're looking at here. Just something to keep an eye out and see how the winter progresses. And like I said, maybe by February or March, it might become wet again. So, and as far as the
I'll take the second part of that.
Yeah.
The warm waters, in the Pacific, we've certainly seen a fair amount of that over the past, 5 or 10 years. They're largely the result of the antecedent circulation. So in general, the way the atmosphere and the oceans interact with each other, the way we like to look at it at a first order is that in the tropics, like with El Nino, the ocean oftentimes will influence the atmosphere into particular modes. But in the extratropics, like off the California coast and further to the north, it's more the other way around. The ocean might provide a little stability to the atmosphere, but in a general sense, it's really the atmosphere that's kind of contributing and causing those warm waters, the patterns that we've seen. So, if that atmospheric pattern breaks down, you'll see that warm water disappear fairly quickly. I mean, we've seen that before. I guess if it persists long enough and we see the right type of circulation, it's warmer than average, so we might see air masses that are warmed a little bit as they pass over that compared to normal. But usually it doesn't play that significant a role in the weather, in the climate outcomes over North America.
Our next question comes from Curtis Alexander. Curtis, your line is open.
I think Brian just asked my question, so I'm good with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason Seminell. Jason, your line is open.
Great. Hey, thanks so much. I guess my first – I've got two questions. My first one would be, obviously ENSO neutral, but, even in ENSO neutral, sometimes you lean a little bit more towards La Nina, or you lean a little bit more towards El Nino. So if you had to sort of right now take a guess as to, whether this winter would look a little bit more like a La Nina winter or more like an El Nino winter, given the SSTs, given tendencies, is there any suggestion there? That's the first question. And I guess also given the weak ENSO signal, are you therefore relying more on the dynamic models for your forecast this year than you might, be at a stronger ENSO signal And I guess I have a third really quickly. 2 or 3 years ago, you mentioned you might start issuing snow forecasts as part of the winter outlook, and I was wondering if you all are coming closer to that and where you are with that effort. So thanks so much.
Sure. So first question, well, as far as the tropics, while we and that's actually the forecast that we issued last week for ENSO, while we are leaning, I think it's roughly 60 to 65% chance of neutral, we do lean more towards El Nino versus La Nina developing this winter, somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 or 30%, I think, for El Nino and whatever's left, 5 or 10% for La Nina. The actual forecasts themselves, interestingly enough, with a wet north and maybe dry in parts of the south, would actually be more like a La Nina signal, and a lot of this does come from the models as well as the trends that we've seen. They're maybe a little bit at odds with each other, but that's literally the way they are. I mean, we're really expecting ENSO neutral, so really we don't expect to see either a typical El Nino or La Nina circulation set up over the tropical Pacific, and then something that would influence North America. And the last question was about snow outlooks. Yeah, we're still looking into that. The reality is that probably our best shot to issue those would be when we do have El Nino or La Nina. The snow patterns are a little more consistent when we see that. I suspect that if we were doing a snow outlook this year, given the current forecasts, it would probably not be very much different than what a climatological forecast would be. But I suspect we're probably still a little ways from issuing those types of forecasts.
Okay, great. That's very helpful. Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Joan Grala. Joan, your line is open.
Thank you. I'm very impressed with all the learned questions and answers. Forgive me. This is a subject new to me. Would you please just walk me through, perhaps at a slower pace, to the Mid-Atlantic outlook?
Sure. So the Mid-Atlantic for temperature, we have a slight tilt in the odds towards a warmer than average winter. So if you wanted to actually go really slow and give it to you in terms of the three probabilities, I would say, you know, there's a 38% chance that temperatures will be above average, a 33% chance they'll be near average, and whatever's left, I believe that's a 29% chance that they would be below average. For precipitation, again, it depends on where you are. Some of the areas, like down in Virginia, are largely equal chances, which means it's a one-third chance of either above, near, or below average precipitation. Further north and west, including the D.C. area, it's just the barest tilt towards a wetter-than-average winter.
And New York, please?
New York, again, is just in that slight tilt towards wet. You know, but very, very slight. I mean, again, it's very not all that much different than an equal chance or a one-third, one-third, one-third probability.
Okay, and then my last question is, if you had to pick a winter, this upcoming winter most likely will resemble, it would be which winter?
You know what, I couldn't give you that answer because it's not something that we look at. I know that a lot of folks like to do what's called analog forecasting. The reality is that to try to accommodate all of the various modes of climate variability, you'd need thousands of years of historical data to even begin to look at it, and we have far short of that. So it's really not something, especially in an ENSO neutral year, that we've looked at, and I could begin to tell you what we think this year will look like.
Great. I really appreciate your help. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Robert Cryer. Robert, your line is open.
Hi. Back in 2015, we had the so-called warm blob that kind of messed up the El Nino, and a lot of climatologists are talking about sort of a repeat now. But you're from what I hear you saying, that it doesn't seem to be having or it doesn't seem to generally have a big impact on the coming winter. Yet, even though we've got ENSO neutral coming, we show, or you show, a drier than normal, or odds for a drier than normal early winter in Northern California. So at this, is the warm waters up there factoring into your forecast there, or why the slightly higher odds for drier than normal in Northern California, if not that warm blob?
So let me go back to the first part of that, talking about 2015. So that was certainly one of our stronger El Niños, and there were very high hopes given the drought in California that we would see a wet winter that didn't pan out. But I would not, and I have not seen anywhere in the literature that ascribed the warm, as you called it, blob is what contributed to that. The reality is that we did not see the typical pattern of tropical convection that would have extended the jet across the Pacific, and that's kind of why we never really saw the expected pattern. As far as this year, that dry signal shows up in a number of our dynamical models. The models certainly have the initial state of the ocean as the beginning point of the forecast. I don't know the diagnostics as to whether that's where the dry signal comes from or something else, so I can't rule that out. I can only say that it's not something that we typically expect or see the ocean itself typically does not force the atmosphere in that region of the Pacific.
Thanks, Mike.
Our next question comes from Mark Torregrossa. Mark, your line is open.
Hey, thank you. Two questions for you. When you look at the graphics and there's a 40% chance of above normal precip, does that speak to just the chance, or is there any way to link amounts to that? And then my second question would be, December through February, you talk about that as winter. We use that as winter. You have equal chances in the Great Lakes, but if you go in further, January, February, March, April, March, April, May, you trend toward colder than normal and wet in the Great Lakes. Is that something other than the long-term trends, or do you see some sort of other forcing mechanism?
So first question, the 40% right now, the number that would be associated with that would be what what we call the tercile limit, or how much precipitation you have to be above normal. We do have another product that we call the probability of exceedance. It's not a very well-named product, I don't believe, but what it gives you is the probability that you will exceed a certain threshold of precipitation. So, and it is available on our website, where you could actually go in and click a point, and for at least a significant area, you could find out, the probability of exceeding 6 inches of rain or 8 inches of rain during the three-month season. But this, from looking at this map, the 40% only applies to that limit when we go from near average to above average. The other question with regards to the cold signal, that actually is something that shows up in the trends. I think if you were to just think of the last few years, actually, I know in the D.C. area, we've seen kind of early winter generally warm, and late winter and even spring has been persistently on the colder side into March, even into April sometimes. It's not necessarily, we don't really have diagnostics as to why we're seeing that, but it is something that we've observed, and so that colder, the tilt towards below average temperatures in late winter and then into the spring does come from that tool.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Larry Spillman. Larry, your line is open.
Yes, we had a very wet spring and summer in Florida, and then it's like someone turned off the spigot. It's gotten really dry around here. What kind of a winter can we expect precipitation-wise as we head toward the wildfire season early next year?
Well, the outlook for Florida and is basically equal chances. So I guess that the simple explanation of that is kind of everything's on the table. There's really not a strong signal from any of our tools pointing us towards either a wet or a dry year. So, at, you know, at this point, really, it's you know, one-third chance of all three outcomes.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Mike. I'm sorry, I cannot pronounce your last name. I apologize, but I'll open your line for you.
I am so offended. It's as though nobody has ever been able to pronounce Augustinac before. No, I'm just kidding. It happens all the time. Two questions. The first is, are you willing to characterize your confidence in this seasonal forecast overall, given the ENSO-neutral conditions? And then my follow-up question is about the swath of above-average precip odds in the northern U.S. Am I understanding you correctly that that's mostly attributed to the long-term trends? And if so, are you willing to get into what's causing that long-term trend?
So, first question on confidence, I would say that this is not one of our most confident forecasts, and literally the way you can understand that is the fact that only over Alaska and in Hawaii does the probability reach 50% for any point. So, what that tells us when our probabilities are stay below 50%, that our confidence is certainly less than, I guess you'd say, normal or ideal. The precip, you know, is one that again is in the trends. I think there was some consistency with some of our models as well. You know, cause for that, you know, don't really have an answer for that right now. That's something that you know, again, we see decadal modes of variability in various fields. You know, we just kind of acknowledge it and utilize it in the forecast, but we really, at this point, I'm not aware that anybody's been able to explain that.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Lisa Kasky. Lisa, your line is open.
Hi, I'm calling from South Dakota, and just wondering on the above-average precipitation. At this point, you know, do you know enough to be concerned about flooding again next spring in terms of, you know, we've already had a wet year this year?
You know, that's a good question, and it's one that I don't have all that much to say about. Certainly, conditions there are still on the wetter side, and so a wet winter would likely set the stage again for more flooding next spring, but it's probably premature to say much more than that about it right now.
Okay.
Our next question comes from John Boyer. John, your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I think this question would go to David. Regarding the drought we have here in Virginia, can you describe the factors involved with the forecast for drought removal and the confidence level in that going forward?
Yeah, well, since it is a short-term drought, pretty much developed in about 2 months period with the very high temperatures and lack of rainfall, we might right now, this is probably a favorable time of the year for soil moisture recharge. You get cooler temperatures. When it rains, it tends to soak in. There's no vegetation growth, less evaporation. So if we do get the rain, which we just did here yesterday, that sets the stage now. If we get additional rains, that'll help soak into the soil even deeper and provide more improvement. And the short term is showing some more rain for a lot of the eastern third of the country, hence why there's a lot of the improvement in the southeast and mid-Atlantic. So hopefully, not only by the end of January, but hopefully later this year, we may see little or no drought around the mid-Atlantic area if the short-term weather patterns continue. Like I said, this is the prime time for soil moisture recharge. So as long as you get the rains falling steadily, we should see rapid relief. And I guess our confidence is moderate to high if the short-term forecasts do come true with the rainfall.
All right, thanks so much.
Our next question comes from Seth Borstein. Seth, your line is open.
Thank you. David. Mike, if you ascribe to Arctic amplification theory, which seems to be growing in acceptance these days, the strongest signals you get are in autumn and winter. So are we more likely to see large jet stream dips, and thus, you know, the I think we have to use the word dreaded polar vortex moving more with Arctic amplification here? Is that at all? I mean, and does that sort of fit also with the, you know, more swings from the sub-seasonal oscillations here?
You know, certainly we could see that linked to even MJO sometimes can link up through the Arctic. One thing I did want to touch on, though, since you brought up the Arctic, and there's been some recent studies published earlier this year that looked at the links between colder mid-latitudes and the loss of sea ice. And the basic conclusion, and this was a pretty extensive modeling study, the basic conclusion is that while they seem to be happening at the same time, it's not that one causes the other. It's that the circulation pattern that's been setting up causes both. So it's not that the loss of sea ice is causing the mid-Atlanta or the mid-latitudes to be cold. It's just that the circulation contributes to both of those. And that's an important distinction, especially going forward, since we're not really sure where that what's driving that circulation. But we certainly expect that sea ice is going to continue to decrease. But it doesn't mean going forward that we're going to just see a continuation of cold across the mid-latitudes with these extremes in the, as you refer to it, the polar vortex.
So, but the sea ice was rather low, you know, that this summer. I mean, I believe it was second or third lowest. Going into that, does that say that there is a circulation that has been reducing sea ice, and therefore would that same circulation be causing more polar vortex vortices wandering over this way?
You know, I don't know that it holds for the summertime, to be honest. So the reduction in sea ice during the summer, I was certainly not necessarily seeing. The circulation patterns you get during the summer are much different during the winter. But again, in these modeling studies, they've literally forced the atmosphere with reductions in sea ice, and they don't get the disruptions and the colder weather into the mid-latitudes. When they do it the other way and they allow the atmosphere to cause the reduction of sea ice, then you do see the excursions of cold into the mid-latitudes. So again, it's while the two are happening together, it's not thought that the sea ice loss is what's causing it.
Okay, and then one other theory that's out there is, you know, you're familiar with Judah Cohn's theory about, I guess it's October Siberian snow cover, and I know it's too early. Are there any indications what's happening over there and what that might mean here?
You know, it's interesting. Some years I know the answer to that. This year I have not looked to see how Siberian snow cover has been going. I guess it's a little on the higher side. I think somebody in the room is telling me. I will say, though, that theory is the high snow cover years are supposed to then translate into a negative AO or NAO. Despite it seems like many years with above average snow cover, we've now had 6 years in a row with the NAO being positive. So I'm not sure how well that study and that link has been holding up, at least over the past 6 years.
Okay. Thank you.
And at this time, I show no further questions.
Okay. So with that last question, and thank you all so much, that concludes our conference call for today. I want to thank our speakers, Mike Halpert, our Deputy Director of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, and David Miskus, meteorologist and drought expert here at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, for their expertise. Again, if reporters have any follow-up questions, they can reach out to me via email, lauren.gacius@noaa.gov, and on the phone, 202-740-8314. That concludes our briefing today on the U.S. Winter Outlook, and I thank you all for joining us.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.